You know, I've had a lot of people say to me, do you think they actually brought it home?
They might have. They might have picked it up.
I really, really think, George, given the timeline and the transcript of what was going on at Shorty Crater at that time, that they actually could have. Because all it would have taken is a nylon rope attached to the rover to basically, you know, lower your a guy in a spacesuit backwards step by step down that gentle slope to get to it, to put it in a bag and then bring it back up again, you know, hand over hand on a rope, because under 1/6 lunar gravity, rappelling down that slope would have been really easy if you had a rope and the rover to stabilize you.
Why is that picture appear blurry, Richard, when the Hasselblad photos that we've seen look crystal clear?
Well, because you haven't zoomed in on any particular details in the Hasselblads. When you take a normal film, you know, picture with film, that you have film grain. What we're doing, because we've got 8 separate shots of this thing, I'm in the computer very carefully superimposing the different views one over the other, and that drives down the noise by the square root of the number of images that you can carefully superimpose one over each other. But it's very time-consuming, and I've just gotten back, and there's been a whole bunch of other stuff that's happened while I've been away. I've had to catch up on that. I'm going into the editing room tomorrow, literally, to begin editing the Joshua Tree DVDs. We're preparing actual audio for the truckers and for people who have iPods so they can download for a really small nominal fee an almost a live version of what happened during the entire Joshua Tree weekend, so they can follow all the discussions and all the confluence on 2012 and how this lunar robotic head fits into the biggest picture you can imagine. So I've been a tad busy, and I haven't had the chance to do what I love doing, which is sitting at the computer and putting this stuff together so we get the last bit of signal out of these images. But we will do that, and we will publish it, and you will see that the details you saw that almost knocked you out of your chair that night
will be enhanced.
I mean, the most convincing thing about this, George, are the eyes.
Yeah, the irises in the eyes.
Those camera lens irises in both eyes looking so eerily like C-3PO. I mean, that did not pop out until I superimposed 2 of these Hasselblad images that Steve Troy was able to get out of NSSDC, which is the National Space Science Data Center at Greenbelt, Maryland, at the Goddard Space Flight Center. And when I supered those in the computer and stood back and looked, bingo, those camera lenses, those iris eyes popped out, and I just said, good grief. How can anybody argue that this isn't remarkable?
You have got to get me that picture of C next to this robot head.
Okay.
You know, the cross picture you have?
I'm looking at it right now on the screen.
Let's get it to Tom. We'll get it to George Lucas to get his reaction to that.
Wouldn't that be cool?
I would love to do that.
Well, you know, because of Iapetus, I have suspected for some time, because of George Lucas's connections with Joseph Campbell, that Lucas was privy to some things that the rest of us may not be. I mean, this is just too eerily close. First of all, he creates a Death Star that looks like, you know, Iapetus, the moon of Saturn, right?
Right.
And then I find on the moon, in a place that no one would ever have imagined, except somebody who thinks beyond the edge of the paper for a living, something that looks eerily like C-3PO. Now, what are the odds? I mean, you're a guy that doesn't really believe in coincidence, George. What are the odds that a producer, even as brilliant as Lucas, could, out of the depths of his soul and his imagination, in the middle of the night at 3 o'clock, not listening to Coast, come up with this just by chance?
I know. I'm telling you, you know, you showed a lot of things at Joshua Tree that were mind-boggling. But when this photo came up, I tried to tear it apart. I tried to just do whatever I could, just, you know, not again, Richard, here we go. No, this one is too compelling. In terms of size, would you say it's about the size of a human skull?
I can not only say that, I can prove it. And I'm going to put that up on the Enterprise website for the conference people first, because, you know, they were a little ticked off at me that I went on your show and I put it up on the main page of Enterprise, and the whole world got to see it before.
But you promised me, and you delivered.
Well, you know, I try to keep my promises. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to do that analysis in the next week or so and put it up on the Enterprise Conference so that the people discussing, seriously discussing the pros and cons and what could have happened. And what I'm actually hoping is that by doing this way, that we might get somebody inside NASA who knows a lot more than we know now, who basically says, okay, enough is enough here, and slips us a disc with some really cool information. Because I know that this is not the best data that exists. That's what my astronaut contact, who I sent this shot to a couple of months ago, very matter-of-factly said. I mean, I can quote verbatim from his email. He said basically, when you get better data, come back to me, which told me that better data exists.